How fast is Jordan Schusterman? We're about to find out.
We're heading to the MLB Draft Combine, where they will definitely, maybe, probably let me run and time it with official baseball stopwatches. It is Monday. We are going to be previewing the MLB Draft Combine, where we are heading, Jake Mintz, in just a matter of hours. And of course, it is Monday. We will recap the Major League Baseball that happened. And we have a special guest, Mr. Nate Tice of Yahoo Sports. How convenient. It's Monday. It's Baseball Barbercast.
Next. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbercast, the only baseball podcast in the world that can bench press 250 pounds for 25 reps. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And as long as we're each on one side of the barbell, I think we got a chance.
Teamwork makes the dream work. I don't think that's allowed. I don't even know if they're doing bench presses at the MLB Draft Combine. They probably are. It seems pretty standard. But we're going to find out on this episode of Baseball Barbercast. We are previewing, yes, the MLB Draft Combine, just the fourth annual MLB Draft Combine. We are flying down to Phoenix, Arizona, where this combine will be taking place this week at Chase Field, where hopefully the roof will be closed and the air conditioning will be blasting, as it is a cool 110 degrees down there in the desert. Looking forward to experiencing that for the first time, Arizona, in the summer. But we are going to be talking a good amount about the MLB Draft Combine on this episode. We have a special guest, Nate Tice of Yahoo Sports, now fully of Yahoo Sports, recently joined the squad. He is, even though we do not care very much about football, he is someone that we very much appreciate. I had a conversation with Nate last week, so you will hear that later on in this episode. But it is Monday, and we still do have some Major League Baseball to recap, some news and notes, some heartbreaking developments with one person in particular. But Jake, before we get into that, where are you? How are you? I'm excited to see you in person tonight. What's going on?
I am still in Omaha, Nebraska, home of the Men's College World Series. I have been at all six games so far. It has been a delight. The first three games of this event were all walk-offs, which is unprecedented and bizarre and sensational. We previewed the MCWS on our Friday episode. If you're interested in learning more about the tournament, give that a listen. The one thing I just kind of want to zoom in on is Christian Moore's performance on Friday night, where he hit for the cycle, went 5 for 6, including one of the most unbelievable home runs I've ever seen. You know, Jordan, we talk about home runs that we see in person that live in our minds forever, that we'll never forget. And I think I now am up to really 5. Okay. It was Wyatt Langford in the Men's College World Series last year against UVA when we were on the concourse, right? There's Pete Alonso in the Futures game when we were in the dugout and hit it to the pole. And then two that I'm not sure if you were there for, the Bryce Harper against the Padres, Bedlam at the Bank.
Oh, yeah, no, and it definitely wasn't there for that, but that's a good one,
And the Schwarber 488 in San Diego. And so those are my 5. And the one that was added is Christian Moore going 440, 117.5 off the bat to dead center in Omaha, which just doesn't happen. This kid is phenomenally strong. Fascinating story. Born in Brooklyn, went to a boarding school up in Connecticut, makes it from there to the University of Tennessee, and now he's going to be a first-round pick.
Yeah, great. Unbelievable performance. Were you in the press box for that home run? I'm assuming, which, because just... And it is amazing to watch on television, but I can imagine that view of, especially in that park where even though the ball has been flying a bit more, to center is still not a normal place to hit a home run in Charles Schwab at the Chuck Box. So shouts out to Christian Moore. The Tennessee Volunteers are 2-0. They are cruising so far. They are looking absolutely excellent. You did a good recap that you can read of kind of all the games that's up on Yahoo, which I encourage people to check out. But yeah, that's the Men's College World Series, obviously continuing to roll on. But you will not be there as we are flying to Phoenix. And yes, most of this episode will be combine related. But Jake, because most people tuning in on Monday are expecting to get the weekend recap, we are going to give it to you in expedited fashion.
And we are going to combine, got it, that coverage with a little bit of MLB. Now, Jordan, I have not been locked in because I've been out here in Omaha doing college stuff. And so... the one story that has kind of trickled through to my college brain now is our beloved Pat Hoberg. Perfect Pat, the number one umpire. Perfect Pat, who literally did not miss in the World Series in 2022. He seems to have gotten himself mixed up in a little bit of dribble drabble, a little bit of maybe allegedly over under, a little bit jambling.
Right. Jambling. We'll keep this brief because this is clearly still a developing story. But basically, when we talked about the players who were suspended for gambling recently, as we referred to, it seemed like during spring training, the legal betting partners that baseball now has were alerting the league when people associated with the sport were involved in sort of some sort of gambling. And it appears that such a thing has happened once again in the case of Mr. Hoberg, as the league refers to him as. This is from the league. During this year's spring training, MLB commenced an investigation regarding a potential violation of MLB sports betting policies by umpire Pat Hoberg. Mr. Hoberg was removed from the field during the pendency of that investigation. While MLB's investigation did not find any evidence that games worked by Mr. Hoberg were comprised or manipulated in any way, MLB determined that discipline was warranted. Mr. Hoberg has chosen to appeal that determination. Therefore, we cannot comment further until the appeal process is concluded. This is why we will cut this off here, and definitely we'll be talking about this again at some point in the coming weeks or months, is that Mr. Hoberg, our hero, Perfect Pat, one of the best umpires in baseball, who not just is good at calling balls and strikes, but has been shouted out by the likes of Bryce Harper in interviews when talking about umpires being crappy, as being like, yeah, you know who is good? Pat Hoberg. You talk to players around the league, you say, you know who is good? You know who is nice to me? Pat Hoberg. Not every player is going to like him. I saw Cameron Maben put out a tweet that was like, this guy was annoying. I didn't like Pat Hoberg. I was like, oh, okay. All right. So there's another perspective. However, most well-regarded as good at his job, Pat Hoberg is appealing. He put out a statement, I'm appealing MLB's determination that I should be disciplined for violating the sports betting policies. While that appeal is pending, it would not be appropriate to discuss this case. That said, I have devoted my adult life to the profession of umpiring, and the integrity of baseball is of the utmost importance to me. I look forward to the appeal process and grateful to the MLB Umpires Association in supporting me in this appeal. So there is more to be uncovered here, right? Well, when players got suspended, they were like, yep, that sucks. I gambled on baseball. Sorry about it. Here, I tell you everything that I did and didn't do. Now I'm banned for a year, or in Tuca Pita's case, B4L. Gone forever.
B4L.
But in Hoberg's case, this is an ongoing thing. This is disappointing. As you pointed out before we recorded, Jake, while I would like to have the most generous interpretation of the situation, there ain't any other. Vic Carapaz is not getting, disciplined for this so far, right? So we know. So we're stuck with Hoberg in some sort of mess that he seems to have gotten himself into, and we will find out what happens from here.
Look, I don't know any inside information here, but dude, free Pat, dude, free Pat, fight the power. Pat is appealing, and he is appealing to watch call balls and strikes as well. Booyah. Look, we don't know anything. Dan Iasonia is not getting, something here is amiss to an extent, right?
Clearly, Pat has made some level of mistake.
Yeah,
what that mistake is and how much we will be judging him, whether we will ever see him umpire games again, that is to be determined, right? This is not discipline. This was not, you're gone forever. It's even as we stand now, there is reason to believe that Pat Hoberg will return one day. However, right now, doesn't appear that day is coming anytime soon. Go ahead.
Pat's only mistake was being too nice with it.
This is the last thing I'll say about this. In the event that Pat Hoberg is cleared, even that, he's disciplined for the rest of the season and then comes back next season, I am very curious if when Pat Hoberg returns and they announce him at whatever, Tigers Royals series in 2025, does the crowd just go nuts for Pat Hoberg returning to his post behind the dish? I hope. We'll see. I'll be cheering him if he's there. If that's unprofessional, sorry. All right. Anyway, let's get to the actual baseball. Normally, our weekend recaps, we fly through the sweeps, the mops, and the 2-1 series wins. We're going to go a little bit out of order and just prioritize what is most important that happened this weekend. And while normally I would say, do we have to start with the Dodgers every weekend? Had the Dodgers just regular 2-1 series win over Kansas City, we would not be starting with them. However, when Mookie Betts gets hit in the hand and has a fracture, when Yoshinobu Yamamoto leaves his start early and has a strained rotator cuff, and it's going to be out for some time. We are going to start with the Dodgers because while they still have a massive lead in the NL West, while Shohei Ohtani and Freddie Freeman look outstanding, Freddie has been on fire lately, right when I was starting to doubt that he was going to have a career year again. This is a big deal. How they choose to shake up the lineup, how they choose to go with the rotation. It sounds like Bobby Miller is going to be returning this week, so that's good news. We know Clayton Kershaw is also on the comeback trail. I am very fascinated to see how this offense kind of reshapes. Muncy still isn't back yet because Mookie has just been so important. Now, the good news for the Dodgers is that Miguel Rojas has also been sneaky, really solid. So him being their shortstop is not the biggest deal in the world. However, still, offensively, they are taking a hit here. And yeah, this is, you know, Mookie hasn't missed a lot of time in his career. So anytime that Mookie's not playing, it is a big deal.
The Dodgers are in an interesting spot here because, like you said, I mean, they're not going to bungle the division.
And they ain't
sweating.
It would
take a real catastrophe. And it seems like in Mookie's case, he will be back for the postseason. Yamamoto as well, but there's definitely reason to be slightly more doubtful with him, just as is the case with pitcher injuries. In the case of Yamamoto, okay, it's a great reminder that when you give any pitcher 12-3-25, it comes with an inherent baked-in risk that anything bad could happen to their arm at any given time. Yamamoto, over his last few starts, was starting to turn that corner and showcasing the specialness that had been advertised around him. And especially in that start at Yankee Stadium, I was there. I mean, it was electrifying, right? And so it was like, this is the prince that was promised, right? And that was one thing, the conversation when he signed. Now, the other is what we're seeing now, which is arms are fickle, arms are tissue paper, and hopefully he will return at some point. But it's just a good reminder that, you know, life is short, as are arms.
Yeah, and so we just have to hope we'll see him again. But even Mookie, like, generally fractured hands, that's still at least usually a month and a half or so, right? So this is, you know, no surgery is required. It'll heal at some point. But yeah, 98 to the hand, no one is invincible from that. So that sucks. That sucks for the Dodgers. And maybe it will, you know, drag them down further. We'll see. You know, the offense was in a really bad place, but Mookie was a part of that. He had started heating up again. But Freddie and Ohtani this weekend, man, oh my God. Like, I'm guessing Roberts hinted probably leading towards Ohtani leadoff, which is pretty fun. I think that's what I would do if I was him. But we'll see how this lineup starts to look.
Ready for a spin cycle right here? This is how Roberts is gonna play this. Ready? You know, these guys going down, obviously it's tough for our club, but what it's gonna do, it's gonna open up opportunities and spots for some young players to prove themselves in our lineup. And that'll be beneficial to our club moving forward. And now, while I do think that some of that is gobbledygook, there is an element of it to that where it's like,
that's true.
The Dodgers need some of these young guys to prove that they deserve to be in the lineup in October. And
that's true.
I'm not going to sit here on a baseball podcast and tell you that Mookie Betts fracturing his hand is a good thing. Like, I'm not an idiot,
but
I'm not that much of an idiot.
Yeah, here's the real spin, though. Well, first of all, let's remember that not only has Teoscar Hernandez been awesome, Will Smith is, you know, still has a case for best catcher in baseball. He's having a career year offensively, so they'll be fine. Muncy will be back. Here's the real spin that is a guaranteed in a month and a half. What are they going to say? Oh, it's just like, this is our trade deadline acquisition. Oh, we just traded for Mookie Betts and Yamamoto. It's like, well,
we got Mookie Betts for free.
Yeah, right. It's like, I think the Dodgers will make a trade, but if they don't, you could be damn sure when Mookie Betts plays his first game on July 30th or whatever, right before the deadline. I'm like, oh, that's our deadline acquisition. Anyway, Dodgers take 2-3 over the Royals. Royals showed they fought, they battled there, but the pitching was a little bit overwhelmed at times there. Still a good showing for Kansas City as they continue their fantastic series of season. Yeah.
Jordan, I mean, we're like multiple minutes into a baseball podcast on a Monday morning, and we have not mentioned that the New York Yankees played the Boston Red Sox. Are we going to get fired?
No, hopefully not. But if we are, you know what? It was worth it to talk about Mookie Betts' fractured hand. I would say, and Christian Moore, which I would rather talk about than the Red Sox and Yankees. This was the first Red Sox Yankee series of the year. The Red Sox take 2 of 3. They win on Sunday Night Baseball. They steal 9 bases on Sunday night, a franchise record. When you tell me that the Rays or Rockies or Marlins set a franchise record, I'm like, okay, that's nice. When you tell me that the Red Sox set a franchise record, I'm paying attention because they've been around a while. And 9 steals in one game is not something that has happened very often whatsoever. In fact, I believe since like in the last half century, it has only, basically, it's only happened like 10 times in the last 100 years. It happened all the time, you know, early dead ball era. Teams were running wild and catchers were not particularly competent. But unfortunately, Jose Trevino was taken advantage of last night.
Look, you make a great point. You know, William McKinley was president when the Red Sox began to exist. That's a minute and a half.
Yeah,
it's been some time.
Different. It's different than right the D-backs franchise record. So anyway, 9 stolen bases in one Major League Baseball game is patently ridiculous. And most impressively, the Red Sox are now multiple games over 500. Didn't know that was allowed. Congratulations to them. They had been yo-yoing back up and above and at 500 for the last 3 weeks, and now they are 2 games over.
Yeah.
And they just took a consecutive series over the Phillies and the Yankees. So that's the Red Sox. All right. Good for them.
I assume they play the White Sox next and they'll get swept.
That sure sounds accurate. Who are the Red Sox playing this week? I believe they have Toronto. So they're going to Toronto. So I will be in Boston a week from now. So I'm excited to see the Red Sox and see if they are at 500. Then I am sure they will be. The Yankees are fine. Anthony Rizzo may have gotten hurt, which is unfortunate. But like they're okay. I mean, obviously losing to the Red Sox on national television is not going to put anyone in a good mood, because that's just how this rivalry works. As we talked about last week, it doesn't matter how good the Yankees are playing. When you lose that one game in frustrating fashion, you are going to act like the world is ending. But the Yankees are still very good.
Three more series to hit on before we talk combine. One, Orioles Phillies. What an unbelievable atmosphere at Camden Yards. You know, I heard that they were going to play this in Elkton, Maryland, which is about halfway between Philadelphia and Baltimore, right off 95. Really happy they decided not to do that. Good call. Doing it at Camden Yards was the move. Sellouts at the state. It was just, it looked amazing. I was very jealous I wasn't there.
You know, obviously, the team
I play for and the team I grew up rooting for, you know, against one of
us. That's true. It's really amazing. We must have been really, really conflicted there. But yeah, I mean, the Orioles showed out. It was a close couple games in the first two. And then Gunnar Henderson was like, all right, we're gonna win now. They saw four home runs against Zach Wheeler. First time Zach Wheeler's ever allowed 4 homers in a game. And it kind of ruined the Burns-Wheeler showdown. But Orioles fans weren't minding. It was pretty sweet for them.
Not only would a Phillies-Orioles World Series be good for business, it would be entertaining for the rest of America. And we could just post up in between the two cities. That would be really lovely, I think. Very convenient.
Let's give Elkton some business.
Yeah, I mean, taking the Amtrak, no free ads, back and forth between Philly and Baltimore. I mean, says no? Philly, New York, fine with me. Let's stay on the Eastern Seaboard, East Coast bias, no problem at all. Two more. One is Astros over Tigers.
Yeah.
Like, the big one, big news here, Jose Abreu, thank you for your service, but no more service.
Thank you for trying your best, but we will not be needing you around anymore, even if we still owe you $20 million next year.
This is a dishonorable discharge.
Yeah. Do not know if Jose Abreu will play Major League Baseball anymore. It would be nice to see someone else give him a chance. However, that would be like the ultimate flyer because the signs do not indicate that he has it anymore, which is highly, highly unfortunate. Couple other Cardinals taking
one
two
quick
of the
thing.
Cubs.
Yeah. One second.
We got to get to the sweeps also.
I understand. Just very quickly. Yeah. Abreu is a fascinating player who deserves really a whole episode. His career is singular. And whenever it does truly come to an end, we'll give it the space it deserves. But the important thing to understand now is, again, the Astros are paying him nearly like $25, $30 million to not be on their team. That is how bad this has gotten.
Yep. Cardinals over Cubs, Blue Jays over Guardians, Brewers over Reds was fun. Snoop Dogg was in the booth. If you haven't seen those clips, those were amazing. Ellie De La Cruz scored on a failed pickoff. I don't know if you saw this clip. It was absolutely amazing. The best part of it is that the ball went through his legs on the throwback to second. So it looked like he got, you know, nutmegged. And then he was like, oh, wait, the ball's in the outfield. And poor Blake Perkins, who had a very up and down weekend. That's Ellie De La Cruz. We need to get the ball in a little bit faster. Yeah, I know it was a perfect throw at home, but you're dealing with the self-proclaimed fastest man in the world. We're going to need to show a little bit more hustle there.
I want you to think about all of the things that Snoop Dogg has seen in his life. Okay? Snoop Dogg has lived a fascinating existence. So many just accomplishments and stimuli have passed through his eyeballs, and still he saw Ellie De La Cruz and was like, that's nuts.
That's different, right? I'm not sure if he was there for that play. Ellie did a bunch of crazy stuff this weekend, but I was thinking, like, Snoop is, as far as celebrities go, like, as far as approval ratings, like, he's got to be up there, man. Like, Snoop Dogg has to be pretty high on the list as far as, like, you know, anyway.
He's the Ichiro of pop culture. Pirates over Rockies. We have Skeens is going to pitch against the Reds in Pittsburgh today. First matchup between those two teams. Angels beat the Giants. Diamondbacks beat the White Sox. Let's do 85 minutes on Diamondbacks, White Sox.
No, I am not even going to acknowledge those series because we have four more. They were all sweeps or mops. Jake, the Minnesota Twins. We did this in total reverse. So sorry, Twins fans, if you tuned in like, oh, Jake and Jordan, we're about to go 10 minutes at the top about the Twins. Well, you're going to get a couple minutes now. The Twins mopped the A's. We had a rain out on Saturday, which gave us a doubleheader on Sunday. And in the second game on Sunday, the A's were absolutely battling. Tyler Soderstrom is back. This is the Tyler Soderstrom we were promised. He did not look good as a rookie last year. He looks fantastic since he came up back up from
AAA. You know what happened?
Yeah.
They replaced the canister in the back of the Soderstrom.
Oh, my God. I've made that mistake so many times where it's like, oh, what's wrong with it? What's wrong with it?
What's wrong with my Soderstrom?
Thank goodness they did that because he looks fantastic. Yeah. However, the A's pitching just could not contain what is now, with Royce Lewis back, a legitimately awesome lineup, or at least the top of the lineup. Carlos Correa go look at his Savant page. He is not doing there. The only thing that is below average right now on Carlos Correa's Savant page is his 45th percentile sprint speed. Everything else he has been good at or excellent at. He is having an all-star season. Sure, the counting stats are not at the level of Bobby Witt or Gunnar Henderson or some of those guys, but he deserves to be an all-star as a reserve if there's room. He's just, Carlos Correa is totally back. He's healthy. He's been awesome. And then Royce Lewis is ridiculous. His 162 game pace when he's been playing is, it's just so funny because it's like we've been doing this with Buxton there
for
the last 10 years. But this is even more ridiculous from an offensive standpoint. We've talked about how much we love Royce Lewis. I'm so happy to see them both succeed there. And yeah, the Twins are coming. Listen, they're still a decent bit. Let's see, how far back are they after this little streak? They've won 7 of their last 8. They are now still 5.5 back of Cleveland, but only a half game back of Kansas City. So they are coming. And the Twins are going to make this AL Central race very interesting.
Three sweeps, Nationals over the Marlins. The Nationals pitching renaissance. Here's a take I kind of only sort of believe. Give Sean Doolittle the Cy Young because, congrats to, who's a good NL pitcher, Jordan? Congrats to Zach Wheeler for being good. Guess what, Zach?
Sorry, Suarez. I know you had the year of a lifetime, but actually... The Nationals improving this much is more. Yeah, the Nationals have improved even more than Ranger Suarez has improved. And Ranger Suarez has improved a lot.
That's what I'm saying. Ranger, you are just one man. Okay. Sean Doolittle, all he touches turns to gold. The Nationals sweeping the Marlins, which, good. The Mariners sweeping the Rangers. Logan Gilbert, 33-0, and he gets 3 runs of support, is absolutely banana land. The M's are 8.5 games up in the division.
Now we're in like so they're like 75% Fangraphs odds to win the division. Like, there ain't no turning back now. Like, you gotta win the division, Seattle Mariners. It ain't gonna get any easier than this. Yes, the offense is still very hot and cold and frustrating at times. Yes, you have some injuries. Yes, you're hanging on for dear life with whatever the hell's going on with Brian Wu's elbow, but this rotation is every bit as amazing as we could have hoped, and the offense is good enough. Julio's heating up, and these other teams are not very good. And so now you just have this opportunity to win the division for the first time in 2001, and they should go do that. They still should go get help at the trade deadline, whether it's bullpen, whether it's a hitter, and I think they're going to do that. But it's right there for them, man. They got to go make it happen. Yeah.
It's the Mariners are looking around, and they're like, anybody want this? Nobody wants this? You guys want
it? All right. Okay. All right, we'll take it. But in this case, like, this was a resounding, like, oh no, we will take it. We will sweep the Rangers. Yeah. We will extend this lead.
Last thing is Mets over Padres. I need you to explain the Grimace memes to me, because like I said, I've been knee deep in college coverage and I just keep seeing pictures on the internet of Grimace pitching. My understanding, he threw out the first pitch at a game recently, Grimace, the purple McDonald's blob mascot. And since then, they have not lost.
Yeah, it's pretty much, you got it. I don't have much else to add. That's pretty much what's going on with the Mets. And I mean, Francisco Alvarez is back. JD Martinez has been fantastic recently, which is not a huge shock, because that is the kind of guy that, like, again, eventually it's going to click when you have that much of a track record. It took him a while with that late start, but he looks awesome. Had his first walk-off home run of his career over the weekend, which is mind-blowing. That's like not something that makes any sense. But yeah, they've won five in a row, and that is a good note to end on here with this recap, which is that the Mets, who are a 1.5 game out of a postseason spot, are one of 9 teams in the National League within 2 games of each other. This is just getting goofier and goofier by the day. 9 teams within 2 games of each other. Is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? I don't know, but it sure is funny.
The middle of the National League is all of the interchangeable white guys behind Clayton Kershaw when he wins the Cy Young Award. It's like, someone distinguish themselves, please.
Oh my gosh. Anyway, so that we will continue to sort through as the season rolls on. All right, Jake. Well, that is the baseball. Sorry if you are a fan of a team that did well this weekend and you wanted us to talk about more of it, but we need to speed this along and get to our discussion with Nate Tice. I had the pleasure of talking to Nate Tice and comparing the baseball and football combines. You're going to hear that in a few minutes. But before we get to that, let's just kind of set the stage a little bit. Where are we going? Why are we going? What is about to happen this week in Phoenix, Arizona?
In the words of my beautiful fiance, why are you going to Phoenix again? You know, why are you in June?
Yeah.
It's
on purpose.
Just going to sauna. Here is the deal. What is the MLB draft combine? What is a combine? The way I have been describing it to people is it is essentially a tryout or a showcase or a workout. Players who are hoping to be drafted this upcoming draft. The draft is in about a month during the All-Star break. Players go through a series of different drills and workouts and activities and interviews with teams so that the teams can evaluate and assess them and make decisions in the draft based upon those performances. That's how I would throw it in, you know, the dictionary. That would be my combine. Now, in the National Football League, as you will hear, the combine is a much, much bigger deal. And part of that is because the National Football League is a much, much bigger deal. Baseball instituted, they created this combine about 4 years ago. I remain skeptical, to be completely honest, about its importance. But still, we are going, and we are going to investigate and see just how much it really matters. But let's get a little bit specific before we throw it to Nate, Jordan. What exactly are these players doing, these high school and college players? What are they going to be doing? What have they done in previous years at Chase Field in Phoenix this week?
Yeah, so it's 4 days, sometimes 5 days. It's unclear how long the strength and conditioning stuff and the interview stuff lasts into the weekend. But the first 2 days in Chase Field are going to be just a full-blown showcase workout where you're having batting practice sessions, you're having bullpen sessions, and then on Tuesday night we'll have a high school all-star game. And the reason why the league wanted to do this is a few reasons, but it's not just about necessarily promoting the draft and its process and its players and the amateur players, although that is a big part of it, right? What they still want more of is to be able to get the next generation of players in front of the casual fan in some way. And by broadcasting this event on MLB Network on Tuesday, they are allowing some of the top players to sit at the desk with your favorite MLB Network personalities or former players, and people can get familiarized with them in a ways that even 10 years ago was just not a thing whatsoever.
Right. And that fits into an overall strategy by MLB to promote other aspects, other parts of the sport, so that the pipeline from, you know, up the chain, fans could care more about players earlier on. Now, they are pushing back against, I would say, a couple major barriers, right? One is that not all the best players are going to be at the combine, right? And so the players that really you should be caring about, like Travis Bezzada and Charlie Condon, who are in the mix for number one overall, you will not see them. They will not be there. That's one. And then the other is the gap in time between the draft and when a player reaches the big leagues, right? And so those two things are always going to be working against the league. However, we are interested to see how the combine actually functions as a television event, as an event that people can like invest themselves in. Now, it will always be for the real hardos, the true sickos out there.
But I would also say that like, then if you flip it to, well, why does this matter in the sport of baseball? Not necessarily to the casual fan, although, of course, if you're listening to this, we hope that you find this interesting, too. And we hope you, you know, enjoy this conversation with Nate and follow our coverage this week. But why do teams care about it, right? Why did the league create this? Because generally, and this is a theme across baseball, which is that MLB is just trying to get everything a lot more structured and streamlined. There are some good things with that, and there are some bad things with that, right?
We've like seen the, this minor in the minor leagues.
Yeah, exactly. We've seen this in the minor leagues where, okay, let's get it so that every team has the same number of players and the same number of affiliates, and we're it's the same roster limits. It's all very contained and structured. And by holding a combine where you can have over 300 of the best draft eligible players, because there will be over 300 players there. And yes, while the very, very top of the class is not there, it is still over 90% of, you know, the top 300 or so eligible players will be there. And to organize an opportunity for all teams to, most importantly, it's really twofold, because while the on-field stuff is fun for us because we like to watch, you know, high schoolers take batting practice and college players fill bullpens, whatever, really it's about everything that happens behind the scenes. It is about the medical evaluations and the physicals that the players are submitting, and it's about the interview process. Because as you refer to, that journey into pro ball that takes a long time, so much about... And this is true in other sports too, but like, you really need to get to know these kids and understand, is this someone who I want to give a few million dollars to that is about to embark on this very challenging journey of getting to the major leagues? No matter how talented they are, no matter how hard they throw, no matter how hard they hit the ball, no matter what stats they put up in whatever college conference, to be able to sit down with this many players over this small amount of time with the exact personnel that you want them to, right? Because yeah, area scouts are running around the country all spring doing in-home visits and occasionally meeting with them, and sure, you'll do Zooms here and there, but to have this all in one place in 1 week just allows for so much more of the player getting to know the teams and the teams getting to know the players. And that is really the purpose of this event.
All right, Jordan, let's kick it to your conversation with Nate, which I already listened to, and it's really fun. I was not able to join, and I will live with that regret in my bones forever. But you people do not need to suffer the same fate. So we will be back after this break with Jordan chatting with me.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. I am now very excited to be joined by Mr. Nate Tice, one of the newest members of the Yahoo Sports team. Nate, welcome. This is your Barbacast debut, and we are actually going to talk about some football, which you're not going to hear very often on this show, but we are making an exception. So, Nate, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thank you for having me. What a host. You're just like, hey, you don't care about those vegetables. Let's have the meat. You know, it's just focused on that. You're an Atkins guy, right? Let's just focus on that. I will say it wasn't my first exposure to your guys' podcast. I've been a fan for a few years, so I'm very excited about this. But you had to, I think they posted a thing where they had a player in each jersey from each team. Mm-hmm. And I think you had to name it off. And I felt like you did a pretty dang good job, except there was one I remember I was screaming as I was watching that. I was like, come on, Buda Baker. Buda Baker.
Oh, yes.
Buda Baker.
Yes. The graphic that was basically hyping up the NFL season. And yes. Jake and I, who have essentially stopped following football closely 10 years ago. And so but listen, we are just American, you know, white guys. So stuff seeps through. You know, you can only avoid so much if you're going to be online in the year 2024. So some of the football players do make it into our consciousness. But the reason why we are bringing you here today, I know if you're watching, you're saying, oh, he's wearing a Mariners hat. Of course, you bring on this fellow M supporter. No, it's not. Nate, listen, he has other positive qualities here that we want to have him on the show for.
No, we're talking about the double. Yeah. That's why I'm here, is we're going to relive the double.
Listen, that's possibly will happen on a future podcast. But the reason I've invited you here today, Nate, is to talk about kind of the topic and our focus for this week, which is the MLB Draft Combine. And you, as someone who comes from the football world, has lived, grown up in this football space, the NFL Combine is something that has just kind of been something that has fascinated me from a distance as someone who hasn't even, you know, followed football that closely. And now, as MLB embarks on just its fourth ever draft combine for its own sport, I thought it'd be a good idea to bring you here on the show and do a little compare and contrast and kind of ask some questions about what a combine that has been around for decades actually looks like and what the goals are for a combine in, of course, America's number one sport. So let's start with the, I guess, a very basic question for you, which is, What are your earliest my understanding is that the combine stretches back to the 80s, but like this is a thing that has been relevant in your life as a football person, observer, player for, I imagine, a very long time. Is that accurate?
My entire memory, as far as I can remember, as far as my first memory of Chuck E. Cheese third birthday, the combine's been around, but it really took a newer life, a newer importance, I would say, in the late 90s. And mid to late 90s. And that's when players realize they can train for it and go, hey, we know what we're getting tested on. Why not practice it for 3 months? And so you saw some shifts and changes of that early 2000s, kind of the same. And then mid, late 2000s, like a lot of things with the NFL, it was, what's another event that we can make money on? Mm-hmm. And so that's the shift to prime time. That's the shift of the dates of everything. That is the changing of the focus of what they're showing, like how the emphasis of everything. But the 40 yard dash is the big event at the combine. But I actually always think the thing that is most important about the NFL combine is the medicals and the interviews. Because now you're getting everybody in one spot with the same doctors, getting all the, vigorous tests. These guys are in there for hours. And I actually feel bad for the players. They've done a little bit better job the last few years and make it a little easier on them. But that is the main thing of the combine, is medicals and interviews with decision makers.
Yes.
Not any of the on-field stuff. We have this thing called tape. And that's what I think is ironic with the baseball one. I'm sure we're going to talk about this.
Yeah.
You guys have more data than anybody.
Absolutely.
What do you need a combine for?
Absolutely.
Just watch them run from zero, from home to first. We got the time there.
To that point, though, you kind of jumped ahead to one of my next questions about what is the most important part? Because the NFL Combine and what baseball is hoping to create, the MLB Combine is a television event with events and, you know, more glorified batting practice or bullpen sessions from guys with all the TrackMan data that's actually televised. Because that is in some ways a new thing to kind of be showing that in a practice setting for amateur prospects. I would say that is relatively fresh. But I think you're already jumping at what I've already heard in the first few years of the MLB Combine. This will be the first one I'm attending, but talking to people around the industry, they'll tell you the same thing. It's about getting the kids in the room to understand what they're about and the medical stuff that they undergo, to your point, kind of streamlining the whole process to where we feel like we are comfortable with what we are selecting. And of course, with the bids, this is of course a different system in terms of negotiating draft bonuses, signing bonuses in baseball versus football, which I'm sure has a lot to do with that as well. But back to that interview process. When is that something that you feel like has always been true? Do you feel like that now there is a Is more emphasis on that from a character focus standpoint, from a work ethic focus standpoint, and all that makeup and all that off the field intangible stuff that is so hard for us to sometimes talk about, yet we all acknowledge is very important? Is that a relatively recent thing, or do you think that was true back to the 90s as well?
It's always been true. I would say too, though, what I have found, I think everybody's found in the NFL too, is now the players are aware, so they get coached up by agents, they get coached up. So now it's become this whole game of, now you got teams asking weird questions, just trying to like throw them for a loop, trying to get them off the script. And then now it's a whole new game than it was maybe 10, 15 years ago. Everybody just gets trained at the stuff. So there's a lot of money involved. So you're going to get coached up and trained up. There's also now what we're finding is more player empowerment, which I'm a big supporter of. Like I always am fine with players taking it into their own hands. Mm-hmm. Like I'm always about that. So you see Marvin Harrison Jr. just going, I'm not working out. I'm not meeting anybody. Yes. Or Caleb Williams going, who was the number one pick with the Bears, going, I'm only meeting with the Bears. Mm-hmm. Sorry, guys. Like, I know you're not drafting me. Like, but 5 years ago, I wouldn't even say 10 years ago, especially, but 5 years ago, no one was doing that. Like, then we're seeing guys skip bowl games. Now it's trickling into the training process before the draft. So that's been kind of the newer development, I would say, is now we're adding into this players aren't doing certain tests too. Like they're just going, why would I do a three cone drill if you're dinging me for my agility? Like, you know, and I get it. I would do the exact same thing. It's frustrating for me as an evaluator, but I get why they're doing it. I would do the same thing. So I think now that interview process has always been huge. You're getting guys in the same room. It's the head coach, usually the GM, maybe a couple other personnel guys. You got coordinator. Say if you have like, say you're interviewing the offensive lineman, you'll have the coordinator, the offensive line coach, and you get kind of that, you know, herd, you know, attack, 5-on-1 kind of thing going on there. Oh, that question's a good question. I'm going to go off of this, or I'm going to throw him for a loop, as opposed to maybe just a 1-on-1 with the scout.
Sure.
Because then there's the other thing, and this is why I've always gone into, and the NFL draft process is exhausting as far as just a narrative and just the discourse and everything, is, you know, when sources say this, or this coach says this, who's watching the watchman? Who's sourcing the sources? So a guy might go, oh, player's lazy, all that. It's like, well, one guy might say that. And then you talk to 9 other guys and they're like, he's awesome. But that's a huge thing why you want to get in a group setting. Because one guy might just have a, just hate the player and the others might love him or vice versa. So I think that's a huge thing too, is then you can start seeing biases kind of get deflated or inflated because of the interview process.
I want to tie this back to the combine, but will you just describe what kind of drives me crazy as someone who doesn't even actually have to follow football, but because, as I mentioned earlier, it's hard to avoid. There is so much time between the end of the games and the draft. And this is something that in baseball actually wasn't as much of an issue until it was pushed back to the All-Star game, right? Previously, for years, the draft was at the beginning of June. Now, that created some other issues, notably in the college season, is that it was happening in the middle of the college postseason, which was problematic for other reasons. So I think am a proponent of pushing it farther back beyond the end of the college season. However, you know, we got Omaha going on, and there's still going to be another few weeks. And so now for the past few years, we have also kind of, in, as a baseball industry, gone through the same process of, you just got a month sitting around, everyone just talking in circles, and you end up with these rumors about where guys want to go, where guys are preferred to go, oh, what teams like this guy. And I imagine it's clearly that times a billion with football. And so I imagine that is, first of all, exhausting. That's the word you just used to describe the process.
It's exhausting.
Yeah. And it just seems so goofy when I just see, again, even tangentially, the amount that changes about the way people evaluate these quarterbacks or whatever in the months since they've played a game.
It's insane. This year for me was Drake May from North Carolina was my number one player.
Yeah.
I think he's fantastic. And I think Caleb Williams was my 1B. But then Jaden Daniels made a huge push, ended up being the number 2 pick from LSU going to the Washington Commanders. And nothing happened in 3 months. Not a ball was thrown. No one ran a 40. No one did an interview. And the discourse that came from that was, I just couldn't believe it. I was like, what? Did I miss something? I tried to be very good at kind of my independent view of somebody. And then I'll talk to people. And I'm like, is May an asshole? Like,
has he pissed off too many of the wrong people for that have nothing to do with this? Right.
And everyone's like, no, he's awesome. He's great. He's I'm just like, what's going on then? And, but that's what happens. And then you get the narrative off the narrative. And then you get, you know, the reply to the reply to the reply to the reply. And then it's like, it usually circles all the way back. But yeah, I agree with you. But it's how that has to happen in the NFL. Course. And they want an event every month. So I agree with you. It's tiring.
It is exhausting. And of course, it's all on a smaller scale to baseball. And I understand it. And in some ways, I'm grateful that, you know, those conversations are, although it'd be kind of fun to turn on
you
ESPN
guys have
and
stats
see.
At least.
Yeah.
Like, that's true. For me, 3,500 yards, throwing for 3,500 yards in Pac-12 is different than throwing 3,500 yards in the MAC.
Sure. Now, tying this back to the combine, though, then where are the gains to be made, right? Because a lot of the top players, as you said, and we've seen this already in baseball too, we'll see this at the combine this week, a lot of the top picks, because they know they're top picks, I'm not going to take BP. I'm not going to throw a bullpen. What's the point? I've already proven myself. And I can't blame the player whatsoever. So at least in a football context, and I'm curious if you're curious in a baseball context, we're still figuring this out. Where are the gains to be made? Outside of the interviews where you blow the front office away, oh, this guy's brilliant, oh, he's incredibly driven, blah, blah, blah. On the field, how much of a difference does that stuff actually make? Like, can guys actually jump 2-3 rounds with their draft stock for what they do in a 3-cone drill? Like, that's something that is very difficult. Or how many bench press, you know, that's something that I still can't wrap my mind around. Is that nonsense? Does that not actually happen? Or are there some cases where that's possible?
You're asking me who thinks it's nonsense. I think people, even people I respect and people in the league, take it way too far. I think even bowl games, all-star games, like Senior Bowl and everything.
Sure.
Everyone's going, whoa, he showed up for 3 days there. And I was like, yeah, I got 24 games I can watch.
Right. That's, like, well, I think that's what I, like, Senior Bowl practice. At least that's practices, a game.
Yeah,
set,
sorry.
Right?
Again, yes. I got to feel my audience. No, yeah, no, no. That's yes, okay, Senior Bowl practice. Yeah, so it's an all-star game between, right, you know, now it's all classes. But sure, yeah, it's great for small school guys. I would say that's where the combine is big. So this year we had Quinion Mitchell, who got drafted by the Philadelphia Eagles. He was from Toledo. Max school.
Love it.
Yeah, pretty good year. But he's a corner. Okay, but he looked like the best player on the field when you're watching him. But then that's a guy like that. That's where the gains are. Because then he goes to the combine, runs a 4.4, jumps out of the gym.
Okay, matches up. Right.
He's an NFL athlete. That's what we are confirming. Mm-hmm. But then there's other guys you're like, oh, this guy, Xavier Worthy from Texas, set the record for the fastest 40.
Right.
I knew he was fast. Right. So what's the difference between 4.3 and 4.21? I knew, like, yeah. I know he was small and fast. So for me, a lot of times the film is the test. The film is the answer. And it just takes time. And a lot of film watching takes time. And not a lot of people want to do that. And so I think that's what people use the combine as a way to shortcut some things. But your original question just about the gains for me are interviews. I mean, that's it. It's a confirmation, maybe an outlier. So maybe you're like, is this guy, a good example is Jalen Polk. He's a receiver from University of Washington. He's now with the New England Patriots, goes in the second round. I love him, but I'm like, how fast is he? I think he's going to run like, I just want to make
that
sure.
That one, you didn't necessarily know how fast. Right.
Yes. Yeah. I'm like, I mean, I think he's okay, but if he runs a 4.6, that's a little scary now.
Okay.
But then he goes out, runs like a 4.51. Okay, check. We're good. That's kind of where maybe some gains are. It's just like, are you okay? Okay, good. You're not an outlier.
To your point though, the 40-yard dash, which we're referring to, right? Like still seems like the one that we are paying the most attention to. And it's easy. It's one of the easiest ones to understand. I can't imagine that many even hardcore football fans know what a fast 3-cone drill. Maybe I'm wrong. Know what a fast 3-cone.
No, you're right.
Or even
you're right.
A vertical jump or a broad jump.
Nope, they don't.
Right. And so, but beyond the 40, what are some other events that you've seen guys get more maybe attention for or raise their draft stock? You mentioned some of those 3-cone drills. Maybe there is something with the agility there. Are there other ones that stand out in terms of on-field stuff?
No, that's a great question. Offensive line would be, they have a movement drill, a wave drill. Oh, and so you can see foot quickness and see those guys. When they're enormous, you want to see typewriter feet, dancing bears.
Yes.
That's one. So I was like, oh man, he's kind of heavy footed. That's what we thought. All right. Or wow, look at that. He moved a little. Okay. I got to go check the tape again. He moved a little better. Another one is receivers or pass catchers. They have a thing called the gauntlet drill. Which is, you run a straight line, you have like five or six quarterbacks throwing balls left, right, left, right. You just have to sprint across the field. That is one, because now we have GPS tracking. And it is Puka Nacua from the Rams. This is going to be a story that everyone's going to talk about for 20 years now, because it's like Jerry Rice running a 4.7 40, is that he didn't run a great 40, but then he ran the fastest gauntlet drill, which is, that meant he was able to adjust to a ball and keep his speed.
While he was moving. Got it.
While he was moving and adjusting for throws, left, right, and going full speed, he had the highest GPS score. So now that we have that, that's become more of a relevant drill because of the GPS stuff.
Just to be clear, that's because you were tracking his speed, is what you're saying. That's what GPS score is what that's referring to, basically.
Yes, you're tracking actual miles per hour.
Yes,
the guys
while you are doing those
while
movements.
He's moving and adjusting and actually doing real football things, like catching a football, just running in a straight line.
True. However, catching footballs from five different quarterbacks over the span of 30 seconds is kind of goofy. Like, that's not
kind of goofy, right?
That's not really a live game situation.
So many quarterback gurus I watch on Twitter, and they have these quarterbacks doing the stupidest things I've ever seen. Everyone goes, God, that's a great drill. He will never do that in a game. When do you see a quarterback turning his back completely to the defense and then turning around throwing? It's like, no, there's other things you can do. Sorry. Yeah. I can go a whole rant about trainers and gurus and drills.
Well, and this is something I also kind of wanted to get into, right, is that so much energy is spent on the quarterbacks, understandably, right? There's no equivalent to that in other sports. And as much as I can, you know, continue to ignore football, I'll continually recognize that I don't. Yeah. How does anyone function if you don't have a, that's, there's no equivalent to that, that is having in baseball. There's nothing like it, right? Just have this one player. And so obviously that is where all the attention is going to go. And okay, so you see them making throws. I mean, I remember maybe this is not a combine memory, but when I think back to when I cared about football, I remember Jamarcus Russell throwing a ball, whatever, was it 80 yards, 90 yards on a knee, or what was it?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It was 80 yards on a knee. Yeah.
80 yards on a knee. I don't know.
Which I saw, I've seen in person because I went to a camp where he did that. But it's pretty impressive. So,
I don't know if that was a combine thing or not, but again, I would imagine with the quarterbacks, that's something that like just that is where the microscope is just, oh, I mean, the magnifying glass, everything is just like the body language, even in a workout, people are losing their mind over. And I have to imagine that you have to kind of pull yourself back and say, so you're just said, I just spent hours and hours watching this guy play football games. What am I doing? But
why do I care about him throwing on air with the like, I don't like it, and it's hard for me to go, hey, I'm a serious analyst. Mm-hmm. And they go, you don't care about combine drills? Well, it's grain of salt, grain of salty.
Right.
But, it's a disconnect. Yeah.
Right. But I'm back to where you can make gains. Because again, like quarterbacks, it feels like, man, like a term I've keep using it in a bunch of contexts, like the hay is in the barn, I would assume. You know, you get to the combine. I would like to think that it couldn't change that much of a difference. Not that the interviews are not important, but I guess what I'm leading to, I guess my last question, big picture about the combine is, what is your favorite part? And I imagine you've attended. I don't know how many times you've attended. I don't know.
12?
Did you? This 12, is. I think. Oh, forgive me for not. Did you attend this as a player?
No. I was I have this helmet, but that was barely used.
Okay,
I
know.
I was Russell Wilson's backup, so yeah, I was.
I know we weren't throwing for 7,000 yards.
No, we were not.
I was just
running
like,
a little bit.
I don't know how many people were get actually invited to this combat.
I went. So when I finished playing, I was a graduate assistant at Pitt, University of Pittsburgh, and then. My second year there was my first combine. It was kind of because it's a convention for the people in the industry. Your meetings, that's maybe the best part of the combine. To kind of answer that question is it's a convention. It's networking. It's meeting new people. It's seminars. It's all these things. And that is really what I think is the best part of the combine is that seeing the people, seeing friends. I see once a year. It's usually the Super Bowl and the combine. So I think that really is just seeing those types of people, especially what combine has become now, because it's not everyone, all the guys skipping tests and everything. It kind of changes the math and all.
Sure. It's basically the football version of the winter meetings, right? For baseball, we have that, in December that's in the offseason as well. Yep. Same kind of thing. I know it's in Indy every year, which is cool. Then I guess I would say too, just spinning it forward, because baseball is still in its infancy with this event. Do you imagine the combine change it? Like, what do you think the next era of this event is? Like, is there something where we start to see more? You mentioned that the gauntlet, I don't know how recent of an institution that is. I mean, is the league trying to come up with a more, listen, it's football. People are going to care no matter what. So it's not like they have to get more attention on it. But is there any talk about changing any part of it for any sort of reason, whether it helps the teams or whether it helps the players?
Yeah. Well, first off, they're talking about like maybe moving it. And that's kind of cost something. Indy's a great spot for it because you can walk everywhere. Everything's connected and everything. But that's the NFL going, who's going to pay us the most money? And that's what they do. But I think they're trying to make it more player friendly. I already mentioned some of the schedule stuff. It used to be long days for these guys. They're trying to make it more, hey, we're going to make it, we're going to work around your guys' stuff. Scouts don't want to do the combine. They go straight to another pro day. Like, they don't want to do two, but that's what's happening. They have to now because no one's doing the combine. They want to go on their home, get some home cooking, get another couple of weeks to get better, even better shape, rest up a little bit after the season. So they're trying. But it's hard. It's pulling teeth. They're trying to change the drills to be more, and this is for teams more of, to be more, translatable to actual football stuff, which I've liked because I used to think especially the offensive line drills were archaic, but now are much better, more updated. And I would say that they try to do that with a lot of positions. But again, it's all up to the players participating. And again, if you don't give them incentive to do that, you're only giving them negatives going, hey, you come in here and just get grilled. If I'm, Marvin Harrison Jr., I'm a top 15, top 20 pick, most likely. I get it. Like, I get why not, but I will credit the NFL for trying. Mm-hmm. Even stuff like I mentioned the Senior Bowl earlier, it's not the seniors only anymore. Mm-hmm. It's juniors and sophomores can participate now because they're trying. They're like, hey, we can't just do seniors. That's something from the 80s. You know, this is different. We have redshirt sophomores declaring. We have juniors declaring. We have small school juniors declaring. We got to see these guys. So they're trying, but it's the NFL and it's pulling teeth, you know, but I will say that they are trying to do this. But I also wanted to say too, is that I think the funniest part about all of this, and I mentioned I watch the tape and, you know, oh, wow, it's crazy that, you know, some of these guys get swayed by maybe just the combine stuff is, and I'm sure you get this in baseball, the hubris of some of these executives and coaches is maybe I think that way, but some of these guys say, man, that guy gave me a good handshake. Yeah, man, you know, you see how he looked me in the eye? Well, man, he threw that.
You could see that determination. You could feel that will to win.
And I wish, and NFL is getting smarter, and I truly believe GMs are getting smarter. Yeah. But that is such a thing still in the NFL circles. Sure.
It's true in baseball.
And I know. And there are some tangible things from that, as far as especially quarterback, you know, maturity and all those things. But then there's also people that just take like one thing and just go, yep, that's my guy because of that. I just, it's like the old, we're taking this guy in the first round because of batting practice, you know, but I just, to me, it's insane. But I've seen some of the quarterbacks I got taken in this first round this last year. The hubris of some of these execs will never shock me.
Sure. Yeah. And obviously in baseball, there's so many other factors and risk profiles that some teams are going to be willing to dive into or not. But I'm sure that's true across all sports. I'm sure it's true in basketball too. I know the basketball combine's a whole other beast that I'm sure we could have a whole separate podcast about. But
basketball people do it, man.
Again, you know, that's the thing. You only have two picks, right? Or one pick. And it's like the pressure really of that is even bigger because it's like you're expected to come in and contribute immediately. That's the thing with baseball.
What's so interesting with me. Baseball, I was going to say, is those there's more positional stuff where offense and defense. Football, it's like, hey, receiver does this, offensive lineman does this. Everybody's so platooned and isolated. That's what's interesting to me with baseball. It's much more realistic. A guy might run and you go, maybe he could stay in the middle infield. You know, maybe he can't. You know, that is interesting to me because you get small samples of that in football, but baseball, I feel like it's so much more open off
it. Well, and it's just the timeline, right? I mean, you turn on the NFL draft, what does it say on the bottom? What does the team need?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And you would just never see that in baseball because it doesn't make any sense. Now, I think that there's a little bit of that because you will see some teams sometimes horribly failing at this. For example, the Angels a couple years ago only drafted pitchers when their farm system needed pitchers, and they drafted a bunch of bad pitchers. But, you know, that's
the Patriots drafted all offense. So that's what's funny. On our live show when I was with The Athletic, we did our draft show. And when the Patriots went all offense to help out the quarterback, May, I was like, there's a baseball team that did this. And it was so okay. There was the Angels with all pitchers, right? Okay. All right.
Well, it was the Angels, and we called it the no hitter. They drafted a no hitter. It was very, very impressive. But again,
not a perfect game.
No, not quite. But they horribly backfired. And you know, 20 rounds of a baseball draft used to be even longer. You have the opportunity to kind of diversify who you bring in, but with all the signing bonuses and all the different positions and high school versus college and, oh, this guy's a senior, he's going to cost this much. This guy's a high schooler, he's going to cost this much.
He's committed to Oklahoma. All that stuff.
Right. It is even more complicated in some senses, but there's also a little bit more leeway because if you draft out a high schooler, you know, maybe it might look bad, but you can still say, oh, you know, we're not expecting him to be in the big leagues next year. You know, whereas football, you don't really have that luxury to be like, oh, yeah, don't worry. We'll send him to high A and we'll be patient with this.
And how much turnover there is with football coaches.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, that plan sounds good for 4 months. But
I'm not going to be here.
That coach that we thought was developing him is now the head coach somewhere else or he's fired. That's the other thing with football. It's not for long. Yes. That's what NFL stands for. Yeah. I forget about the baseball thing is that, you get the time to development, all that stuff. I've always been fascinated about how they manage timelines because the depth of it is just always fascinating. Team building in all sports is fascinating to me. But the baseball one's always interesting.
Nate Tice, this has been a delight. thank you so much for joining me and for giving us a little peek into the NFL Combine. Where can people find your work? I'm sure there are some people that listen to this show that enjoy a little American football every once in a while. So yeah, what are we working on now that that's part of the Yahoo team?
That has surprised me a little bit. I didn't realize how isolated some fans are, where they only focus on one sport. As someone that likes to consume all sports, football priority, but I mean, I watch a lot of baseball, a lot of basketball, a lot of cricket right now.
I actually
like it now that I know the rules. It's one of those sports where I'm like, shoot, I wish I got to play that because it's like right in my wheelhouse. Yeah. you can find me at Nate_Tice, Twitter. Plenty of football clips right now. I'm watching Bryce Young from the Panthers right now, but which hasn't been a lot of fun because that offense is terrible. Then you can find you can read me at Yahoo Sports. You'll find that Bryce Young article soon and some other quarterbacks there. And
let me just say, if you heard Nate's talking about like, oh, I just watched the tape. Oh, just follow. If he's watching the tape, folks. He is sharing his work. So
That's all I got. It's just to show proof because there's a lot of people out there that say they watch the tape and I can tell are not watching the tape. So it's my way of having receipts and going like when someone goes, you never seen this guy play, like, I go, yeah, I did.
You're like, no, I've actually seen too much of this guy. So
And then I'm in my own little lair here where I don't talk to anybody.
It's there. If you want to watch some very, very subtly impressive offensive line play, Nate_Tice has you covered. Nate, thank you so much. Your debut on Baseball Barbercast was delightful, and we really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. Nate_Tice is gone, but we're still here. Oh, not anymore. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to our producer, Andrew Hartz, for mixing it all together. You can email us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Jordan, I will see you later today. I'm excited about that. Are you taller?
I guess you can report back on Wednesday. We will be recording from Phoenix this week. Our Wednesday episode will be from the Combine. We will cover other stuff besides the Combine. And then Friday, we will also, we will be back home by Friday. Look out for a good bunch of interviews coming from the Combine this week. Some of them will be on the podcast. Some of them will be on yahoosports.com. All kinds of stuff coming. We hope you enjoy that coverage. Let us know what else. If you have more questions about it, as you said, you can email us. But thank you all for listening. And we are going to go try and hydrate. Jake, let us stay hydrated in Phoenix, Arizona, where it is 110 degrees. We'll talk to you all later this week.